Hey everyone, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, Ian Kundle, Baseball America Prospect Podcast. Hey everybody, Jeff's back. He hadn't gone anywhere, but he hadn't been on the Prospect Podcast in a couple of weeks because we've been busy. We've been very college and draft and everything as well. We've got a full crew on the prospect side, but it's got good to have Jeff back talking prospects today. And today we are going to talk about a pair of organizations who, as we view it, are on the rise as far as their farm system, as far as their farm system rankings, which we plan to update again. You know, it's a tricky thing to do in season as you account for graduations, but also making sure that you're not using outdated information. We don't want it to be something where we're telling you, here's what we think they are, but our to synthesize everything and put it all together is difficult, but we feel very comfortable in saying that these are two organizations who are impressing. And one of them, the second one we get to, is going to annoy many of you. I'll just tell you that right now as a little sneak peek. But we are going to start by talking about the Atlanta Braves, an organization that across the history of Baseball America, I would say probably ranks number one in the overall farm system rankings if you averaged out the past 40 years, but they haven't been there lately. There's a couple reasons for that. We'll get into that. But Ian, I'm going to come to you first, kind of just diving in on this, which is you're doing our Braves 30. You did the update last month, but we were talking about this and it's like, it feels like where this organization farm system talent-wise is now compared to where it was 9 months ago is a pretty significant step forward.
Yeah, it's been really impressive. And yeah, just comparing, you know, at the time of the handbook where the list was at to what we're working on or what we did update in May and what we're going to be updating again in a few weeks, it's night and day. And what's most interesting to me is that it's not like they went out and made a bunch of trades or did anything in the offseason to augment it. What they've done is just their player development is cooking right now. And you look, Eric Hartman, who we've talked about a lot on here, you know, he's moved even higher in the top 100 in our most recent update. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ended the year even higher, frankly, because he's just continuing to do what he's done all year, which is hit home runs, be a great athlete, just really impressive stuff. But it's not just him. What's really impressed me is that the Braves moving down the system, guys like Tate Southesine, someone who was a first round pick who had, I think you said, a historically bad debut, has come alive this year, and he's showing a really intriguing combination of athleticism, contact, and power. And he's moved his way into the top 100, is now recently promoted to Augusta. Move even further down the list, Briggs McKenzie didn't pitch until mid-May. So he missed the first couple weeks of the FCL. Four starts later, he's now in high A. He was number two on the hot sheet this week. And he's showing some really intriguing characteristics with his secondary pitch, especially his sweeper. The sweeper has a ton of horizontal movement, really high spin rate, projectable frame. Like, Braves clearly saw enough to move him up to high A as a 19-year-old. And even further down, in last week in the article I wrote about Statcast standouts for age, and this is something I've noticed with a lot of the Braves guys, their EVs are up pretty considerably. And you look at a guy like Connor Essenberg, who was a draftee last year, over slot guy in the fifth round. He hits the ball extremely hard. He's kind of been slowed by injury, but since he came back, he's been very good. Michael Martinez, he was a guy who started in the Florida Complex League, has made it up to low A. Has, I think it was the highest 90th percentile exit velocity of any 19-year-old in baseball right now. And it just, you know, goes on. And it's just really impressive that they've done this through just development. Like, these guys have all taken steps forward. And that could be, there's more than I could list if you want me to go on. It's what's really impressive. It's not just one group either. It's different archetypes of players. It's pitchers, it's hitters, it's across the board development. And it's come at a really good time for the Braves, because obviously they have the best major league team, or they have the best record in the major leagues right now. And then at the minor league level, they have their player development apparatus is doing a lot of good things, which is putting them in a really good position should they want to be buyers at the trade deadline, or if they just want to hold these guys and continue to develop them as potential future assets for the MLB team.
Jeff, I remember when we were talking during spring training, you know, we were kind of seeing the first little kind of green shoots of this popping up through the dirt in Northport. What is it about this Braves organization that kind of, it's really position players, isn't it? Like, it's what really comes down to is they have position player prospects again. They've had pitchers. Pitching's not been a problem, but other than Drake Baldwin, the amount of position player prospects they've had in the last few years has been very few and far between, I feel like.
Yeah, after having, you know, one of the best runs of kind of position players coming up to the big leagues about 10 years ago between Acuna, Albies, Austin Riley, etc. There's been some bright spots over the years. You know, Michael Harris, I think, certainly having a great season and you know, was a prospect that kind of moved fairly quickly up our lifts coming out of the pandemic and has kind of shown his mettle. But after that, it had been one of the thinner farm systems in the game for a while. Maybe had some pitchers who at times were a little bit underrated, like a Spencer Schwellenbach, which I think just took a while for everyone to catch up to. They've consistently had pitching talent. They haven't had exciting position players. And you talk about Eric Hartman. You talk about Tate Southesteen. You talk about Jan Heel, or John Gill, for those that like it anglicized. Those are really good players. And we saw sort of the position talent, at least a snapshot of it, you know, in the spring breakout game in Tampa against the Yankees. And, you know, all these guys were in the lineup. Heel that day was kind of the big star, but Southesteen had some good at-bats, hit some balls hard. We all got to look at Hartman, just kind of the athleticism. It wasn't a super loud game from him, but one where you could kind of see the tools. And I even think you go back down the system too to, you know, a guy like, is it Michael Martinez, who's put up really big power numbers so far this season. And I know he's a guy that like the models, including Robo Scout, et cetera, really like. I don't know if he necessarily fits into this same conversation, but those kind of guys, even like the pop-up guy in the complex levels or the lower minors, those players have been few and far between with the Braves over the last couple of years. So I think this is a really good development, and they're certainly one of the farm systems that's, you know, green arrow up, kind of on the upswing at this moment.
I will say, I think part of this also is kind of, we've seen a shift in approach. And let me just lay out big picture here, right? So you mentioned it, Jeff. This is an organization that produced one of the best waves of prospects all hitting around the same time that we've seen in the 21st century. We had them as our number one farm system at the time. We put them on the cover of the mag multiple times. There was a debate at the time about, was it the White Sox young core, the Braves young core, that was the one that was the best. We said Braves. That was 100% accurate. But if you look at that group, so they locked, Alex Anthopoulos came in and locked that whole group up largely. So you had almost around the diamond, other than shortstop, because Dansby Swanson did depart in free agency. But other than shortstop, you know, you talked about Austin Riley. You talked about Freddie Freeman that was turned into Matt Olson, long-term deal. You talk about Ozzie Albies, long-term deal. Austin Riley, long-term deal. You talk about a catcher where they've actually had, at one point, they had more catchers. I don't know if they fully knew what they had, but Shea Langeliers and William Contreras were in their organization, and they went out and traded those guys, but then also brought back Sean Murphy, which wasn't it like they lost that trade. I would say they picked the wrong guy. He was more expensive and not any better, but that's okay because then they produced Drake Baldwin. But so then you look in the outfield and you have Ronald Acuna, you have Michael Harris on long-term deals. So they really only had a couple positions that were even possible that they were going to need guys if everyone stayed healthy. And because of that, I'll just lay out this 2020. Let's work our way up through the 2020s. 2020, they had four picks in that draft. Great draft for them. They got Spencer Strider, but three of those four were pitchers. 2021, their top three picks, their top three round picks, top three rounds were all pitchers. 2022, one position player among their top five picks. 2023, two position players in the top 10 rounds. 2024, one position player in the top 10 rounds. So if you're basically saying what we really have to do is produce pitching, and by the way, you have to throw back that because of the penalties that they had for the illegality in bonus pools and international and under John Coppola and John Hart, they were also penalized where they weren't allowed to sign international signings basically for a period of time as well. So you had a period of a stretch here where they weren't signing international position players and they weren't drafting position players in the draft. Well, you're not going to have position player prospects generally, if that's the case. They have flipped that. Last year, 2025, five of their top six picks were position players. I don't think it's coincidental that we're talking about how much better their farm system looks. Part of that is because they have had this talent infusion of premium pick position players, not all of whom look like they've hit, but they have had some, Ian. And the other thing that you hit on also, though, is the other key part of this is Drake Baldwin was not a top, you know, he was a fifth round pick, if I remember right, but he was not a first round pick or anything like that. We just talked about Eric Hartman. Eric Hartman was not a, you know, oh, everyone out there is trying to get him in the first round or the second round. That was a guy who was waiting to hear his name called to the very end of the draft. They've hit on some later round picks too, but there's just more position player talent here than there was a few years ago, isn't there?
100%. And it's one of those things that with pitchers and pitchers get hurt. And so it makes pitching development or building around pitchers, it's just, there's more ups and downs in that. Whereas if you have that stable of position players and you draft right, which they clearly have done the last couple of years, then that's, you're good to go. You know, you go out and you draft Eric Hartman in the 20th round and you develop him and turn him into a top 50 prospect in the game. You take Tate Southesine in the first round, turn him around very quickly. Connor Estenberg, as I said, and I think it goes back to kind of their going, you mentioned Drake Baldwin, but also Michael Harris was a third round pick. Like the Braves had a long track record of during this time of being able to hit on later round position players, and seemed like it kind of got away for a few years, but now it's just come back in the last 2 years. I think when you look at their drafts, and it's no coincidence that I think the guys that they're hitting on are largely high schoolers. You know, you look, their Eric Hartman was an overslot bonus guy in the 20th round. Essenberg was overslot in the fifth round. Tate Southesine wasn't, but he's still a high school bat. And that's, you know, that's the ROI with high school bats, I think, just as the top of the draft, just as we've seen the last couple of years, is just really good. And I think it extends beyond the Braves. I mean, you look around baseball, I think about the Cubs this year. You know, they took Josiah Hartshorn in the sixth round, and he's turned, it was the sixth round or the fourth round. It was one of the later picks, but they signed him for well over slot, and he's turned into a top 100 prospect relatively quickly. Like, it just seems like there's more upside when you're targeting high school bats. And, you know, they did mix in a few college bats that you mentioned, and for the most part, those guys haven't really lived up to expectations. But when you balance that out by taking risks on high schoolers and you hit on those pay off far more than any sort. You know, you can afford to miss on a second or a third round pick if you're hitting on your fifth and your sixth round picks. And I think that's what the Braves have done really well these last couple of years. And even going back to when we talked about with Michael Harris, Drake Baldwin, like those guys were not premium picks. But if you're able to churn out, you know, everyday regulars from later round picks, that's how you can build a team that can be a sustainable contender for many years.
And that's one thing I think is really useful to note here, kind of looking back. You mentioned Harris, Drake Baldwin, another perfect example of this. Those are developmental wins too. Those are scouting wins, but there's also development wins. I remember seeing Michael Harris very early in his pro career, and it was one of the fastest bats you were going to see. But also, I like, even in BP, he was having trouble hitting the ball in the field. Like, it was pulled. But when I say pulled, it was pulled foul in BP. Like, the turtle was like in danger because, you know, like, it was like he was going to pull it into the side of the turtle. They worked on it, like, he developed, and he's ended up, obviously there's been some ups and downs, but he's been a very productive big leaguer. Drake Baldwin, to find a catcher who looks like he will be an everyday catcher for many years to come, you know, a college catcher from a non-traditional power, although again, Missouri State, very solid program, but to do that where they did, Jeff, like, they really, again, developmentally, even when we've kind of had them like further down on our org rankings in recent years, we kind of always say, like, this is an organization that really does seem to has done a consistently good job pitching wise. But even then, like, even with, I would say, very little crop of position players to develop, they've managed to figure out a way to find a couple out of there. Again, Baldwin being, I would say, the biggest, most recent success story.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. We look at maybe some of the other teams that are at the back end of the rankings over the last couple of years. They've more consistently been able to churn out an above average regular from among that below average kind of group. It's something that I felt like the Astros used to do really well a few years ago before that system really kind of started to thin out, though I think it's coming back up again. I think you look at a development win like Drake Baldwin and just have to be happy about that. From a pitching perspective, they've put a bunch of arms of the big leagues. I think Schwellenbach is obviously one that they'll hang their hat on, probably Spencer Strider as well. Even Bryce Elder, who's kind of pulled off this tightrope act for the better part of a year now, it seems. But I think when you do look at their lineup, there is a lack of positional depth that's been impacted by trades, but also not having that sort of depth of 45 to 50 grade type contributors that, you know, can fill in as a, I mean, right now, Dom Smith is their DH. Mike Yastrzemski is their left fielder. Sandy Leon, because of the injury to Drake Baldwin, is their starting catcher. So I think you kind of look at the top of this, right? And, you know, it looks like a Rolls Royce, and then you go to the backside and it's an El Camino with a Rolls Royce grill. You know, like that's kind of how the lineup looks right now. And I think more of this depth is going to allow them to, because a lot of these guys are still under contract for a lot of years. I think it's going to allow them, as this sort of crop comes up and matriculates up, to fill in some of that depth without having to go to free agency. There's, of course, always the chance now that they do have these prospects and how effective that front office has been in terms of trading, of them going out and maybe moving some of these players to supplement the back end of that roster. So there's some good and some bad there. I think they've had some development wins, but overall, the lack of depth in their lineup right now, I think, is reflective of the lack of depth amongst the position group over the last couple of years.
Okay, before we move on to our other org, I just want to lay it out. If you said, okay, because we said there is the possibility that this team could be making trades at the deadline. You would be crazy if you're a Braves Frost official to not think that the World Series is a realistic option this year. You've been the best team in baseball so far. What if you had one prospect that you said, okay, I'm going to put a fence around that prospect. The rest of the org will listen, but this one guy I'm holding on to, is there one? Because I could argue Eric Hartman, but then I would say, you know what? Eric Hartman's kind of actually the, if someone wants to pay me a premium prospect price for Eric Hartman right now, I might raise my hand, not because he doesn't have a lot of upside, but because still a long way to go. And that's the kind of prospect that may get you back a real difference maker.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
Go ahead, Ian.
I think that in the situation they're in, you have to put anyone on the table. And I agree with you, because obviously we're very high on Eric Hartman. There's still, if you want to nitpick his games, there are things that you can, you know, questions against how he's going to handle lefties at the higher levels. He's very pull heavy. And we've seen that pull heavy approach, it can work for some guys. It works until it doesn't. And we've seen at the majors, you know, you can get caught out where you start rolling over, you start hitting a lot of infield pop-ups if you're just trying to elevate to the pull side consistently. So I think that anyone should be on the table when you're in a contention window like the Braves are. And as Jeff said, they have some areas that they could upgrade. Obviously, Yastrzemski, Dom Smith, guys like that have been great contributors this year. And I think they do a really good job of maximizing those veteran short-term deals or guys they bring in to kind of plug those holes. But if you can go out and get, you know, a long-term contributor for left field or, you know, a better catcher DH type, then I think if you're the Braves, anyone that they're asking about, you're willing to put on the table.
What about you, Jeff? Anyone that you would wall off?
I kind of feel like it could be, it's Hartman for me. This is the kind of prospect that at least if I'm building this team, I understand that he's probably the most attractive prospect in trade. But that's going to be the case for the best player in your system and the guy that you probably want to hold on to the most.
You could have gotten a lot for Ronald Acuna at this point when he was at that stage in his development.
Bingo. Like, you know, James Wood, same deal, right? Like it's one of those type of players. And I think that he has some similarities with Wood, and the hit tool might be maybe a little bit more refined in some regards, where there's big power. It's an athlete that you can dream on. And there's enough plate skills here for this to continue to work as he moves up level after level. I know that he's played and had some big weeks in some hitter-friendly environments throughout the South Atlantic League. But I think if you look at the underlying data, you watch this guy consistently, you see the type of contact that he makes, how adjustable the swing is. And usually with guys like this that kind of have this outlier athletic and like power profile, typically don't have that kind of adjustability that he has. And he has more adjustability than I had kind of anticipated. Because I know Ian describes it as like a hockey swing. Like it's a very, he's a Canadian. It's a very unusual sort of like top hand, right?
Yeah.
How it kind of,
it's like a reverse arm bar. It's really unique.
Well, exactly. It's like a reverse arm bar. But there's some like positive stiffness there that I think he maintains his mechanics really well.
Yep.
This is something like we talk about internally from time to time. We talk about swing mechanics that, you know, some of these guys who are hypermobile that are like incredible movers, like a Cody Bellinger, also are able to kind of move their bodies in ways and kind of cheat a little bit in certain ways because of how quickly they can move, that it can get things out of whack, where he kind of has that Mike Trout like explosiveness. He has this big engine, but he also kind of has that rigidness that really works in terms of baseball swings. There's defensive value there. I just think this is a guy that we could be talking about in 2 years that is in that outfield and is part of that next core. And I would be more willing to kind of move the pitchers, package them with a Southacine or a Heel, some of these other guys. You know, Owen Carey's had a really good season and has been hitting again since he came off of the IL. I think you kind of look at those guys and it's like, I'd much rather work a trade where I maybe have to trade three pieces to get that piece versus Hartman to get that piece. That's kind of how I would approach it.
But I think that that's with the position they're in, they can afford to do that now. They can go with the quantity package over the quality package because they have the quantity that teams are going to be interested in. It's not just, you know, coming into the season, you looked at their system and it was a lot of like college pitchers. That's not going to get you a ton on a trade market. But when you have, you know, exciting impact, you know, 19, 20 year old outfielders who are performing, you have middle infielders. That's obviously, we know teams covet that position, guys who can stick up the middle like Southacine and Heel can, like they have the ability to do that. And yeah, so if you wanted to block off Hartman, I would not blame you at all. Cause I do think the upside could warrant that.
Okay. We got one other org that we're going to take a look at that has improved so far in the 2026 minor league season. We'll do that right after this quick break.
Crouch, you know I travel all the time, and I'm always looking for possible tickets to go see events, concerts, MLB games. When I do, I always find SeatGeek.
Yeah, I'm not traveling, so pretty much I'm looking for the games all in my area. I'm going to look for an Orioles game. I'm going to look for the Phillies game, the Mets game, the Yankees game. But you know what else is coming up? The All-Star game. SeatGeek's got me.
Hey, you're going to need them tickets to the All-Star game. It's going to be crazy. Hey, they have over 35 million downloads for a reason. It's because they have everything you need. Green dots, red dots. You pick your seat, see the scene from your seat. It's the best app going for tickets. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code Territory10 for 10% off your next set of MLB tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any MLB tickets with promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
So we're back, and this is the one that I said is going to annoy some of you, because I will tell you right now, a little story to start this off, which is anytime we talk about the Dodgers farm system being good, we hear from fans, YouTube viewers often, who say they're overrated, they don't produce anything, you just keep saying that they're good, and they're not really that good. And I will just lay out again, as we've said it at times, it is very hard to make that Dodgers lineup. However, if you look at this team right now, I will just kind of point out, like, their most productive position player so far this year, you could argue, is Andy Páez, who is a homegrown Dodger position player. Dalton Rushing, very good for them. Look at their rotation. Justin Robleski. Justin Robleski is not a premium pick, but that is a homegrown development success story. You go to their bullpen, they have multiple bullpen arms that are very useful members of their pen. Jack Dreyer, Eduardo Enriquez, who are homegrown guys. And that's not even counting the Dodgers that populate, the ex-Dodgers that populate lineups and pitching staffs elsewhere. But that's all been good. But what they're doing right now, and Ian, I want to give Ian credit for this to make me do the work on this to figure this out. We just moved Charles Davelin into our top 100 for the Dodgers. And with that, Ian wrote the story a couple weeks ago when we were looking at position player groups. We did a draft on the podcast a few weeks ago about position player groups. And the easiest one of those in many ways was to say Dodgers outfield, because they had at that time four top 100 picks, prospects who were outfielders. Now they have five. And our top 100, we kind of historically, we use our offseason 100 as the canonical list. So it changes all the time during the year. I cannot tell you that this is the first time it's ever happened in season. But I can tell you this. If these five Dodgers outfielders all stay on the top 100, none of them graduate, and are all there in the offseason when we roll into 2027, that will be the first time that any team since 1990 has ever had five players from one position player group, any position player group, shortstop, outfield, catcher, first base, whatever, any group, five position players from one group, outfield, on the top 100. Four is exceedingly rare. We've only had two examples where a team had four. Most recently, the Orioles, I think in 23, had four players who were listed as shortstops at the time. Again, I will say that because sometimes those players move and all that, but that was the last time we've seen four. The Dodgers have five. I'm going to come to you first, Jeff, on this. Like, when you look at this Dodgers outfield group, one of the things that strikes me, we were talking about with the Braves about, with, you know, if they could make trades or whatever. We know that there aren't that many openings in the Dodgers lineup in general. I can promise you this, because most of these guys now, you're like, Josue De Paula, Mike Sirota, Zahir Hope, are all in Double A. Those are not spots where you say, oh, they're years away. They're, you know, don't worry about the position player logjam. They're years away. Some of these guys are going to get moved because there aren't enough spots for them all, right? And some of them are going to have real value if they do get moved, I would think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things with Dodgers that they run into, or Dodgers prospects, I should rather say, that they run into that other teams don't, is do you kind of meet the standard of playing an everyday role for the Dodgers? Especially over the last few years, you know, that they've won championships. These teams have been as loaded as, you know, any team I can think back on in my lifetime. You know, those Yankees teams in the late 90s, some of the great Braves teams, those Oakland A's teams, I know they're tainted by steroids, but were pretty damn good teams when I was having my baseball awakening at 7, 8 years old. This team is loaded. And to be able to sort of pass the smell test, pass the test of being able to fill an everyday role there, come into the lineup with all these giants and hold your own, it's a question. Now, that said, you can look at the top of this system right now, and I think Josue De Paula is one that clearly meets that standard. When you talk about some of the best pure hitting prospects in the minor leagues right now, bat to ball ability, swing decisions, the, you know, power, angles. The power's been there. The angles weren't. It's starting to come into focus a little bit more now. That swing is starting to elevate a little bit more now. And it's not sacrificing the very things that made Josue De Paula such an interesting prospect from the moment he came into professional baseball. Now, are there questions defensively of where he fits? Sure. But it's probably not going to be their starting center field. That's probably not a role that they're going to be looking for. But a corner outfield spot, sure. If they move De Paula in trade, we talked about Eric Hartman and what he could return. De Paula could, you know, return almost anybody that's going to be available in the trade market this offseason. Especially when, you know, sort of packaged with a secondary and like fiduciary piece within this system. And then you move on to Mike Sirota, and Sirota has unbelievable plate skills, and particularly on base ability, swing decisions. He rarely chases outside the zone, attacks pitches within it. Some of the questions about swing and miss early on in the season when he was in high A, even though the numbers were Barry Bondsian, still have continued to improve. I mean, he got bumped up to Double A. His in zone contact rate is up. The contact rate across the board is up. There's big power here. He's maybe not a no doubt center fielder, but someone who can play center field and will be above average to maybe a tick better. In a corner outfield spot, he can run. He's a really well-rounded player. And then you kind of move down to, you know, Eduardo Quintero, who is probably the best defender of this clump of players, and has a really nice balance of skills, had a tough opening couple of weeks in the Midwest League. I think we see this a lot with teenage players that have never played in a cold weather environment, then get stuck in the Midwest League where some of the temperatures and the wind is worse than it is in the Eastern League, is worse than it is in the Northwest League. The first month in the Midwest League is a very tough adjustment for these guys. And sure enough, May 1st comes, you know, they get out of those potential really bad temperatures and weather situations. And he's been excellent since. There's power there. There's good plate skills. There's speed. There's athleticism, all that sort of thing. And then you have this explosive bat in Zaire Hope, who's a great athlete in his own right. Maybe a little bit less of a defender compared to Sirota and certainly compared to Quintero, but probably a tick better than DePaula. There's some swing and miss concern there, but he's already actually exceeded his single season home run total by the middle of June. Not even the middle of June, June 9th. So I think we kind of can look at all of these guys, and then you mix in a Charles Davelin, who they got in the draft last year, was a really well-rounded player. Had some SEC pedigree and you know, did really well with wood bats in the Cape Cod League the previous summer. And he's taken a step forward. It seems like they just continue to do a better job of targeting players, bringing those players into their system and developing them. Because we can look at this clump of five, and I know I'm going a little long here, I'm sorry, but DePaula and Quintero, international market guys. DePaul was a little interesting because he's really kind of an American that moved down there and signed. And then you have Sirota and Zaire Hope, who were like almost like secondary trade pieces. These were not top 100 prospects or incredibly highly ranked prospects. They were interesting players that had been drafted by their respective teams and either had no to very little. Actually, I don't think either of them had any pro experience at the time of the trade. This is the Dodgers knowing the player pool, knowing the guy's attributes, who's going to fit into the system, who has this explosive upside that they feel that they can bring in and really get that out of them. And then you have a draft guy at the back end of a first round in Davelin, where it's like they're hitting on all cylinders in multiple different acquisition windows, and they're ways, I guess is a better way to say it. And they're pulling in really talented players from all of those different approaches. When people talk about the Dodgers, they talk about the money they spend. At the end of the day, the big differentiator for me in terms of why this organization is so successful and so good is because they win in every acquisition window, major league trades, minor league prospect trades. When they trade from like the additional pieces, the spare guys that are on their 40-man roster, that other teams are like, this is a 26-man, you know, major league roster guy. Like, yeah, we'll make this Michael Busch trade and send you Zaire Hope. They have those pieces because they continually do well in every acquisition window and kind of get the most out of their guys. And then they spend money on scouting, they spend money on analytics, they spend money on player development, and they're more progressive in terms of their player development and the types of things they'll try out and throw some money at than other teams are.
Ian, the thing that also strikes me about this is that we have a clear delineation how we have these guys lined up right now. But Jeff kind of touched on it. I can make some different arguments if I want, right? Like, I'll put it this way. If they were willing to trade at the deadline from this group, I could see different teams asking for different prospects because DePaul is a little closer. Quintero's a little bit more well-rounded. Sirota, if you were like, there's arguments for multiple of these guys as like maybe the best of this group in the long term.
Yeah, and it's actually a fun discussion that, you know, I've had with scouts before at games, and you know, we're going through and it's which Dodgers outfield do you prefer, and you ask three different guys and you get a different answer from each one. And it's for the exact reasons you said. It's, you know, depending on what an organization wants, the type of archetype of players that they target, what their needs are potentially, if you're looking for kind of like more of a high minors guy, you can really make a case for any of them. And I think that's what makes what the Dodgers do so impressive is what kind of what Jeff was describing is they have so many different avenues that they bring in talent. And it's not just that, you know, DePaula and Quintero were international signings, but DePaula signed for under $400,000. Quintero was under $300,000. Then they have the trades. Then you have the draft. Then you have Emile Morales, who we haven't talked about yet, but is an infielder having a great season, was recently promoted. He was a big money international signing, got around $2 million. So they just up and down, they operate around the margins so well, which when you're a big money team, I think is something that can be easy to overlook. Is, you know, there's so many different ways you can leverage your advantage, and they choose to do it in every way possible. And that's probably the best possible way to do it, because you're taking advantage of everything you can possibly do. And you put yourself in a position now where if a team does want, you know, you want to make a trade for a Tarik Skubal type, or maybe even someone who we're not thinking of, but, you know, a potential star who's under contract, you can have host Wade Apala as an anchor to that package. If you have a team that wants kind of someone who can maybe move a little quicker, get to the big leagues, who's a good two-way threat with a chance to play center field, you have Mike Sirota to offer up. If you want kind of a little further away with similar, maybe more upside two-way threat as well, you've got Eduardo Quintero. Or if you just want, you know, you want to swing for the fences, no pun intended, with someone who has huge raw power, you got Zaire Hope there. And yeah, they just have so much flexibility with trades with this group. And the crazy thing is, you know, it goes beyond that. They've got guys like Zach Root knocking on the door of the top 100. I mean, we haven't even mentioned James Tibbs, who's one of the top five minor league home run leaders in AAA. He's just sitting there with no spot to play at the major league level. They had Kendall George before he went down. I mean, it's just really impressive what they do. And it's even more so when you think that their draft pick gets docked 10 picks every year. You know, they're doing this with lower bonus pools in international and in the draft. And it doesn't harm them at all. I know I saw their low A team earlier this year. And you look and there's just talent everywhere. And you look at where these guys were drafted. It was a 7th round pick. It's a 9th round pick. It's a guy they got in a trade. You know, it's an international signing. It's an 18th round pick. Like, They just seem to be able to, between their player identification and their development apparatus, they seem to be at the near the top of both of those areas. And what you get from that is, you know, you have a system that entering the season, I think they were in like the 20s or the late teens. And now I think you'd be hard pressed to pick. I would assume they're going to be in the top 5 when we next do this. It's kind of a scary thought when you think about that, because as you said, you know, fans don't want to hear it, but the Dodgers, I mean, they are very good at what they do, and they don't overlook, and there's no details spared here. I think, you know, when you go to games, the odds are you're going to run into a Dodger scout there, because they're everywhere. Then you have their development. They're very good at that. Like, it's just a really impressively run organization, and, you know, you're seeing the fruits of the labor on the farm this year with the gains that they've made, and, you know, how much their stock is rising with these outfield prospects and beyond.
It's like that. I think that's a perfect way to kind of wrap this up, Jeff. It is that the Dodgers' approach is, yes, it's not that they do one thing, it's that they do all the things, right? And obviously, and throw on top of that, that they also every year hit free agency and go, oh, who's the best player available in free agency? We'll take that player too, which, by the way, obviously plays a role in this, because when we talk about this, like, some of what this is okay, like you said, those aren't, some of that is I'm going to turn Michael Bush, you know, into Zaire Hope. I'm going to turn Gavin Lux into Mike Sirota. I'm going to be able to make the trades that other teams, they're looking to find a guy to be a okay regular on a modestly priced big league contract. And the Dodgers don't really have to worry about that. I don't want to make it sound like that part of this is the advantages that come with being the biggest spending team in baseball, but it also comes from being in a lot of ways one of, if not the smartest team in baseball as well, does it not?
Yeah. I it's like, we're always searching for the best pitching development, the best hitting development team. You know, we always talk about the Brewers pitching development, which maybe in terms of results is better than the Dodgers. I don't know. But I think when you talk about overall operation, and just all the things, like you said, that they do really, really well. And it's not just one thing. Like, they're not just a new school organization, and they're not just an old school organization. They beat the bushes. They have guys out there watching these players. They have highly paid scouts, you know, on the domestic side, professionally, as well as the amateur side. They have it internationally, which is why they're able to sign so many good international players. You know, the stuff that they do internally, I think, is very progressive. They're trying things. The conversations that we maybe hear offline and aren't able to fully report on in terms of some of the stuff that's going on back there, I think is just really interesting. And then beyond that, just the Dodgers, like as a business, are tied into a lot of different things throughout the baseball world, a lot of different tools, et cetera, that they're kind of putting money and research into. And I would imagine so, you know, they kind of get first access to some of that stuff. I don't know if those things will, you know, kind of end up coming to a screeching halt with this new CBA and some of the other things that have been discussed. But this is honestly the area that everyone else needs to kind of catch up, because they do not only spend in free agency, which is the stuff that everybody sees, it's all the little day-to-day things that they do in terms of following good processes, identifying what they need to do better, and improving that. And it just seems like the Dodgers are consistently one up on other teams.
The other thing I'll just add to this is, and this is something that's been true for a decade as well, right? Like the minor league baseball CBA raised the standard as far as housing, food, a lot of off-field things for minor league players. That was not like, if every team operated before that, like the Dodgers, there wouldn't have had been the need probably for standards, because, and you would talk to players, and like, if a player went to the Dodgers farm system, I'm talking a guy, not a top prospect or anything, I'm talking someone who just became a Dodgers minor leaguer. It was eye opening for them. It's like, wow, we get nutritious food that really helps us develop. Wow, we get individualized training. We get, it was their idea of doing everything at its top. Whereas I will tell you, I will call out the A's right now. The A's had an owner who was like, how can we basically give them the minimum required, right? And that was the difference between the Dodgers were like, what more can we do to help these players develop? And then the A's are like, hey, by the way, the pandemic's hit. We don't really want to pay these players because they're not going to be playing. Oh, okay, I will, by peer pressure, have to agree to do it because every other organization did it. I guess I have to. That's the difference is you knew the Dodgers were going to pay their players from that, because the Dodgers are, again, you go back to, they are a big spending, but they're also a first-class organization as well. Ian, it seemed like you had something you wanted to add.
No, I was just echoing and agreeing with everything you were saying. It was just reminded me like the Andrew Tolles situation, where they're continuing to support his healthcare, even though he hasn't played for them in several years. Like, that was just another one that came to mind when you were talking about it. They're doing what I think a lot of teams wish their teams could do. And the thing is, a lot, like the player spending is one thing, but the off the field stuff is thing that anyone can afford to do. Cause a lot of this, you know, if you add it up, a lot of it is like a rounding error for the amount of money that owners have. So it's just, you know, this is the way you can operate around the margins and maximize everything. And the Dodgers are the best at it for a reason. You know, they commit the time, they commit the resources, they commit the personnel to it.
Well, that is the Baseball America Prospect Podcast for this week. Do check out everything over at baseballamerica.com. Do also like and subscribe and leave a comment. If you leave a comment on the YouTube page, I try to get to almost every one of those I can. And we do appreciate it also, because that helps other people see the content as well. For Ian, for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.